Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
American Nick Collins is a performer, artist, drummer, and musician. He picked up the sticks at the age of 3 and never looked back. Being the son of legendary drummer Phil Collins, Nick gravitated towards the instrument immediately. Growing up in Switzerland, Nick played drums as often as he could. However, it wasn't until he moved to Miami, Florida, and began playing in different local bands where his passion for drums amplified. Nick began playing drums for his father's solo band at the age of 14 for various charity events. Those charity events turned into more serious performances, such as the 2016 US opening ceremony, until he was finally asked to fill in full-time in his father's band for the Not Dead Yet World Tour from 2017 to 2019. By the age of 18, Nick had already played at venues such as the Royal Albert Hall, Hyde Park, Madison Square Garden, and various other arenas and stadiums around the world. Nick was announced as the drummer for the Genesis' first reunion in 14 years for the Last Domino Tour in 2021. Following that, Nick took up drumming duties for Mike and the Mechanics on their 2023 Refueled Tour, and most recently on their 2025 Looking Back, Living the Years Tour. In addition to that, Nick is working on new material in his own band, Better Strangers, with longtime friends Yang Wan Garten and Joey Rodriguez. Nick is dead set on making a global impact as a drummer and songwriter and hopes to inspire the next generation of drummers along the way. Up next on Celeb Savant, we've got Nick Collins. Where in the world are you and how are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me. I'm in Miami, Florida, technically Dania Beach, Florida, at my band's studio.
And is that where you live or are based?
Yeah, I'm based in Miami. I've been here since I moved here when I was 11, so I've kind of been here ever since.
Naturally, you've got a journey with family members within the industry. So what age, whether as a child or teenager, were you like, cool, I want to follow in these footsteps?
I mean, some of my earliest memories come from being on tour with my dad. I was like 3 or 4 when he was doing his last, his final farewell tour, which didn't end up being his final farewell. It was just that, you know, that farewell at the time.
Yes, yeah.
And so like, I just grew up around it. I gravitated towards the drums from a young age. They were around the house and I just enjoyed even just looking at them. Like I, you know, my dad sat me on his lap and I just would have a tap around. And so I always kind of gravitated towards it. But seeing him on tour definitely ignited that kind of love and that just passion for music. I mean, one thing was seeing him play drums, and then the other thing was also just seeing a band and an artist on a stage with an audience and that interaction. Like, I just kind of really loved it. But as a kid, it was, you know, playing drums was a hobby. It was like any kid. They just do stuff because it's fun. Mm-hmm. I didn't really see it as like, or think about it as a, this is what I'm going to do with my life. But then I moved to Miami in like 2012. And then I used to play a lot of soccer or football, you know, whatever you want to call it. And that was kind of what I wanted to do. And then I kind of found out I wasn't as good as I thought I was. So maybe I should take this drumming thing a bit more seriously. And that kind of tied in with, at the same time, I started playing, whether it was school bands or just different bands out. And that kind of, from there, I kind of never looked back. It was like, oh, this is cool. And so the two guys that are in my band, Joey and Yang, I've been friends with since I was a kid. And Yang specifically, right when I moved to Miami, we became friends. And we started playing in a band together. And after one show, we were like, oh, yeah, this is what we got to do. We got to make a band. And we're still at it now, you know, all these years later.
For the listener, Nick's dad is Phil Collins, as we referenced your dad. So this might be a rhetorical question. Do you believe that having family in the industry predisposed you to be part of it? Do you think that not having family in the industry, would you still would have led into that path? Or you just, this is your path and this is where it's happened?
It's a good question. I mean, I think that, you know, you being predisposed to it can definitely influence and push you that way. That being said, I think with the same mentality can also push somebody away from it. I think
yes.
when kids are around it so much, they just don't even want to do it. They want to do something else. Like my younger brother plays football. Like that's his thing. He's a soccer player because he didn't want to do music, and that's yeah. totally fine. That's totally normal. You know, as far as the question of would I have done this if my dad hadn't done it and kind of pushed me, not pushed me, because it was just kind of maybe a yep. slight nudge into that direction, you know. I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people, especially drumming wise, you know, I think there is a side of like you're probably born with some rhythm and you're born with something, but it also comes from surroundings. Like you're only really a product of what you grew up around. Would I have done this if that wasn't the case? I'm not quite sure. I probably would have ended up doing something different. I think more than just doing it and being able to do it and having the ability, I think also being encouraged to do it is a big part of it too.
Yeah.
So when you have a family and people that are from that industry, they'll always encourage you to follow it, as opposed to having, maybe if I had parents who didn't believe that music was a real job and wanted me to get an office job, I would have done that instead. You know, I don't know.
It's interesting you reference that, because I've previous guest on the show was Joe Sumner, who's Sting's son. And he mm-hmm. was saying that for him, he wanted nothing to do with music because exactly what you said, it was like, ah, but then you fell into it as well. Obviously, being as part of growing up as a teenager, being an observer, watching from the side, and then moving into it more professionally, are there any aspects of it that actually have surprised you? Were like, oh, I didn't realize this was part of it, but maybe being an observer for so long, you were just used to all the elements.
It's a multifaceted kind of world and industry. Like the music and being, you know, good at music is only really part of the equation. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people skills and communication skills are really important. And just also like, you know, day-to-day reliability and productivity is part of it too. I think when you're on a tour, you know, you getting on stage and playing your parts right is the main thing. You know, it's equally important as, are you getting there on time? Are you showing up? Are you enjoyable to hang out with? Are people, you know, do people hate you? Like, you know what I mean? Like, there's all these things that I think are really important for the music industry. And, you know, you want people, especially as a drummer, like you want people to be able to rely and count on you and know that you've done your homework and you've prepared to the best of your ability, that they're not worried, you know, as well. Aside from just being a good drummer, you know, it's coming prepared and coming, you know, having that trust from the band that they can do and focus on what they need to do, as opposed to worrying about what's going on behind the drums, you know. But something that surprised me, I mean, I think the thing that surprises anybody is it doesn't matter what size or, you know, how big a band is, how big an artist is, everybody's kind of just the same. And like, everybody's just people.
Yeah.
And you just communicate as people and yeah. you and they do regular things. Like, I think there's just like, there's this idea that like, oh my God, you know, arena band, stadium band, it must be like this. And it's really not what you would think it is. It's just, you know, obviously there's going to be exceptions to the rule. There's a lot of people who aren't grounded at all, but I think I've been lucky to work with a lot of people that are, and they're just regular down to earth people. Mm. They just happen to be really good at something, but they yeah. don't, you know what I mean? So that does kind of at one point catch you off guard when you're speaking to somebody that, like, you know, their ability and their just, you know, their career is just a huge thing, but they treat you like a human being and like a normal person the way you should or would to anybody else, you know? So that's been kind of cool and fun to kind of learn. But, you know, when somebody's trying too hard, that gets, you know, somebody, especially people who have been around the business for a while, I've seen it where like they can smell that from a mile away. Like when you're kind of looking at it from an angle and you're trying to schmooze somebody and not being really genuine, like mm-hmm. they know that. And so I think it's just, you know, being yourself and just being normal and not trying to kind of always put on a front. You know, I think that goes a long way, I think.
The reason I'm giggling and laughing is so many people know this about me is that my perception is that we all use 2 or 3 ply toilet paper. There's no gold plated toilet paper. So whenever I interact with anyone, whether it's yourself, the lady at the shop counter, you know, my colleagues, whomever, That's just the thing. We all use two-ply toilet paper. And the funny thing is that, as you mentioned, this agenda or schmoozing is that a lot of people perceive other people with a specific label, whether it's artist or CEO or senior manager. Oh, I need to put on this facade. I need to be this different person in front of them because they've got this label, which is not true. And as you said, they will see through it straight away and they'll go through those masks and those relationships won't last because if they're not authentic, they're not genuine.
Yeah, absolutely. And obviously, you know, you hear all the stories of different artists who are maybe like that, that do kind of conduct themselves with a bit of a different, you know, with a bit of an ego or a different attitude towards people. But, you know, I think the majority of people who work and like are hired musicians or are just like functioning bands where it's a group thing. Cause that's the thing. I mean, being in a band is it's a marriage with four or three people and it's communicating. That's a huge part of it. And I've been lucky enough to have played with different bands where, you know, you kind of learn to adapt to a dynamic and you can actually learn to communicate better. Like when I come back here with my guys, with Better Strangers, like we grew up together and we've been playing music since I was like 13 or 14 years old. So we've been through our teenaged angst together. We've argued, we've done all that. And sometimes when you're in that environment, you can kind of get caught up in that, but actually going away and doing different bands and working with different artists has actually kind of made me bring a different approach here. So actually like, oh, let's listen to everybody. Let's actually have a yeah. conversation. Let's not like, you know, fight like brothers would, because of course you're going to do that. So I think it's really helped, you know, it's helped with our dynamic here back home with the band. And I also think it's helped me, yeah, adapt to different environments when I'm on the road.
So tell us, how did the name Better Strangers come to be? What was the inspiration behind it?
Yeah, when we came up with it, I mean, actually, It technically the name is the name of a Royal Blood song. That wasn't necessarily why we picked it, but mm-hmm. Royal Blood is a band that we liked. We were coming up with a band name. This is a couple years ago when we had our singer Ricky in the band, and we were just looking for a name with the word strangers in it. We just kind of liked that. And then somebody just mentioned Better Strangers. We all knew it was the song. We were like, but it's kind of a good band name, so whatever. So we just went with it. It wasn't super thought out. It was just we thought it was a cool name. It kind of makes sense. We all come from different places in the world, and we just kind of all kind of met by circumstance, just random, you know, situations. And here we are, you know, in a band together. So we always kind of thought that was a little cool.
Tell us about the band. What's happening with it? Are you guys releasing things?
Yeah, I mean, so we've just kind of been getting back at it. We've been a little inactive over the last 2 years because we had parted ways with our singer and we'd been trying some stuff, different singers, different things. And, you know, long story short, it didn't quite work out with anybody. And at this point, I just got off the tour with Mike and the Mechanics, and in the three of us, me and Joe, we've been, like I said, we've been in bands for so long and have grown up together. And we have this understanding of each other that I think you could only really have if you spent that much time with people. And so it got to a point where it's like expecting somebody to come in and fit perfectly to this dynamic. It could happen. In a way, I do hope it does. But we were just kind of like, you know what, like, we need to stop waiting on other people to do stuff. Like, let's just be a band. So at the moment, actually, we're writing and doing some stuff instrumentally, which is kind of exciting, actually, because we've never done it. I'm not saying that's the way that we're doing it forever. Like, you know, we're open to whatever and any, you know, situations or opportunities that show up. But, you know, the three of us just being able to be our own bosses and just be us and operate as just us without having to rely or count on somebody else has actually been really cool. And we're going to start playing some shows this summer. We've got a few that we're, you know, that we'll announce soon. We've got one that we'll announce soon already. But yeah, no, so it's exciting times. We're kind of seeing what works. We're just being a band again, trying to have fun, because I think that's the thing. When you lose the fun side of it, then you're kind of like, what are we doing this for? So, you know, we're just stoked to get back out there and playing some music again. And writing new stuff. We've got material that we've been sitting on for a long time that we're excited to share with people. And then whether that leads to releasing it, it kind of just depends on how it goes, what the reception is. I think now, especially that we're doing stuff instrumentally, it's like, you know, we're starting to look at some of the songs through a different lens. What can we do to make them better or more appropriate in this instrumental context? So, but it's actually been it's fun and exciting though. Like it's been nice to kind of get back at it. And this is where my heart is really with this music. So I always have fun, you know, jamming with the guys and writing new stuff.
When you say writing, is it writing just instrumental and then the lyrics as well? And then when a potential singer comes in, they'll sing the words, or explain that?
Well, so when we had a singer, we always wrote the music first.
Okay.
And the way we would usually do it is the three of us, because we live in Miami, and actually, you know, some of the guys that we've worked with haven't lived in Miami. So The three of us would get together at least three to four times a week. We're either writing or working on stuff. And we take our time when it comes to writing. We used to just write and try and finish stuff as soon as possible. But Now it's kind of like, you know, we need to let ideas grow and let ideas sit for a little bit. We're reworking some ideas from like 3 years ago at the moment too. Like, so they're always there because we're lucky enough to be in this awesome studio that Yang has. You know, we have the ability to just record our jam sessions, record our rehearsals. So we'll work on an idea. Once we've got it, when we had a singer, it was once we'd get it comfortable enough with us that we were like, okay, this is solid. We'd send it to them. Maybe we'd bounce off ideas for structures. You know, should we maybe move this part here? And then they would take all the lyrics and all the melody stuff. It would just be them. And then we'd kind of get back and finish it up, fix anything that needed fixing. And that was, you know, how we wrote. Obviously, now that it's instrumental, we just do that first bit. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need to wait for the lyrics. You know, the three of us, I don't think any of us have really gotten into writing lyrics and stuff. Maybe that's something that we end up kind of doing. But we always like that the singer having their own take. Okay. You know, because so much of our personality and just of us is in the song already from our parts that we kind of wanted the same for the singer. Like, you know, I don't want to tell them what to sing and what to write, and let alone the fact that I don't think I'm that great at writing lyrics or melodies. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's kind of usually how we do it. But at this point, we've got a lot of songs that were written as like, you know, songs, whether it was with vocals or just as pieces. And as we've been preparing for, you know, to start playing shows again, we've actually, you know, either rework some of that or added some more free flowing, you know, jams to it where we have an idea, but we're like, let's do something completely different every time and see where it goes. And that's been so like, I've not even been in that zone for so long that it's been kind of tricky to get back there to like the improv side of your brain. But it's actually been really fun because it's actually, you know, we're playing together and it's not just playing the same songs, the same parts that, you know, you're actually interacting and trying to create something different every time. It's been actually really fun.
I mean, that's actually so interesting because it is unique, as you said. There's not many bands that are just instrumental. So it will be fascinating to see how, you know, this progresses. So I look forward to observing the journey. When you, as you mentioned, you just were with Micro Mechanics on the tour. You've done it a couple of times. You've been with bands on tours. What does it mean for a drummer to go on tour with a band, already established band? What does that mean from your experience?
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, I've been lucky that whether it was Mike and the Mechanics or my dad's solo tour or Genesis, you know, it's not the first time that I've kind of just had to step in to the shoes of a band that has, whether it's a well-known catalog or just a very, you know, big built-in fan base. In a weird way, I sometimes find it easier to do that than to do stuff with my own band.
Okay.
Because the responsibility and the, I guess, nerves are only focused on my drumming when it comes to like playing for other people. Whereas like when it's us, you're kind of like, you're worried people are, if they're going to show up to the show, how is it going to sound? What's, you know, like all this stuff, are people going to like the music? Whereas like when you do those kinds of gigs, all I have to worry about is the drums. I know that people are going to be there. I know it's going to sound great because everybody's pro. I don't really have as much to worry about. And so in a way, the responsibility, it comes down to the drumming. And I think for me, they've been different experiences. Like all three bands that I've played with that are at that level have been different. Yeah, very different kind of journeys to how I kind of felt comfortable with it. With my dad, it was, you know, it was a big band. It was 14 people on stage. And it was pop music. So with that one, and it was the first kind of real professional gig that I did. Yeah, I mean, that was great. I kind of grew up on that tour. It was like 2.5 years of my life. So I really kind of went from being a kid to becoming an adult. Then with Genesis, it was only 5 people on stage. I mean, it was 7 because we had 2 great backing singers. But as far as like actually of people only playing music, it was just 4. It was me, Mike, Tony, and Daryl who were actually playing. So there, all of a sudden, there was way more room in the Sonic kind of space that, you know, whereas like when there's 14 people, you're kind of like, you know, your line of like where you should and shouldn't go. And with Genesis, it was a bit different because with my dad, it was a big deal for me because I was young. With Genesis, it was a big deal for me because I knew that there was going to be pressure for the drums because it's such a drum-focused band and there's so many iconic parts that I did feel a little like nervous of like, okay, how am I going to prepare for these? How am I going to, you know, and finding that balance of not only trying to satisfy the audience, but also making sure I satisfy the band for what they want and what they need. Because, you know, a band like Genesis, who had been around for 50 years, songs that fans may love from 1972 aren't going to be the same way that they want to play them in 2021 or 2022, whenever we had done that tour. So you're kind of having to go like, let me try and, you know, learn the most recent version of what they've done live, but also maybe go back to some older live versions, even the studio version. What can I throw in there that I think's been missed out? And, you know, for that gig, it was majority like I was staying true to like the fills and staying true to like the mentality and parts behind it, because I felt like that would be missed if I hadn't done that. With Mike and the Mechanics, Mike, you know, he told me they've had a lot of drummers as well. I mean, that's one thing that always kind of is a factor in this. But he was like, you know what, if you know the songs, and if you know a couple key fills and moments, that's fine. Otherwise, do your thing. Do whatever you want. And so that was kind of cool because you can kind of change it from night to night, and or you can just be yourself behind the kit. And so, but at the same time, no matter what, my, you know, advice is always serve the music and serve the band. Don't serve yourself. Like, it's not, nobody's there to see the Nick Collins interpretation of this music. Like, and so you want to make sure that the songs feel right, and it's not about getting your chops in or getting the cool fast fill. Like, it's about what feels good to the audience, and also, like I said, like making sure that the band can feel comfortable with you there, because I think the drummer comes with a lot of responsibility to ensure that the band is, you know, feels good, sounds good, but also feels comfortable, and that they can kind of do what they have to do and not kind of have to kind of second guess somebody didn't do their homework.
You said a word a couple of times, the fill, the fast fill, or what do you mean by the fill?
Oh, the fill, sorry. Yeah, like that's like sort of drummer puts in basically every 4 bars. It's like like that little part that's transitioning to the next part is the fill. Yeah, so you got the groove and like, you know, the normal thing you're playing, and then when it's going to the chorus, you may do a little snare roll and then you go in. So those things are the fills.
Am I correct in my understanding they sort of fill the gap from that section to the chorus? So you're just adding a little bit of things into that.
Pretty much. That's probably exactly where it came from, actually. It's probably filling the gap. That's probably why it's called that. You can do whatever you want usually in that moment, but a lot of songs and a lot of drum parts have those recognized iconic parts that if I took them out in some of your favorite songs, you would be like, whoa, this is completely different. That big moment isn't there. So that's why, like, you know, with some of the Genesis stuff and my dad's stuff, naturally, you know, you end up sticking close to what it should have been or what it is, so that it sounds familiar. And it's like, of course, yeah, that's the drum moment that happens in that part. Whereas Mike and the Mechanics, because I feel like they weren't a band that had a constant drummer as part of the writing process, you know, the fills don't really end up being that big of a deal. It's more about the songs and the groove and the feel behind it too.
You know, because live music is free flowing. It's energy. It's just is what it is. And I think it's very much a fine line for the audience to have that understanding, not to have expectations. To have expectations, but not. I often go to concerts and I be with people around me, and they're like, they've Googled the set list, they've Googled the staging, they've Googled this and the next thing. I go there without having any understanding of what's going to be performed, in what order, what the staging looks like. I just want to be there in the moment. And I've often heard people say, not necessarily if they've had a Google of the set list, they'd be like, oh, it wasn't a great show because they didn't play this song. So because they were expecting the song and they weren't being in the moment, they were waiting for that song all the time. And when that song didn't happen, it's now not such a great show. The point of this whole long story is for people to throw away their expectations, especially with live performances, because it just needs to be what it is.
Yeah, now I mean it's a great point. I think it really depends on the different bands, and I guess it depends how big of a fan you are of who you're gonna go see. I know for my favorite bands, usually what I do is at the beginning of a tour, I check what they're playing. I just want to know as a fan. I go, I want to know what songs are in the rotation or out of the rotation. Then once I know, then I'm not checking it until I see them, like I just show up. You know, I saw Styx, for example, this Friday, who I'm not super familiar with their material. I just was like, whatever happens, happens. I don't know how long they're going to play for, what songs. It's tough because as somebody who's in a band, but also a fan, I really see both sides of it. Because, for example, my favorite band is Tool. And when I've seen them, they're the kind of band, because of the fan base, because of the type of music they do, you know, they don't need to play their top five songs on Spotify. Like the first time I saw them, out of the five most streamed songs on Spotify, they played one of them. The other four weren't in the set. Yeah. But you don't care because they're that kind of band where the fans are usually pretty hardcore and they know most of the material. Mm-hmm. I think it's tough when a band who maybe has one massive song doesn't play the massive song and you're kind of like, this is why everybody's here to see the gig, you know, because they knew the tune. But like I said, it depends on, how big of a fan you are of the band. I think at the end of the day, if they haven't put the song in there, most of the time it's for the benefit, is because either they're tired of playing it. And if you think it's bad not seeing the song, it'd be even worse if you saw the song and they didn't want to play it. And you know what I mean? So they've taken it out for a reason. And at the end of the day, it's not like it's not like you're watching a movie. If you want to see the perfect performance and the perfect, set, then go watch the set that you really enjoyed watching on YouTube, or go play their record, But if you're seeing them live, that is just as much part for the band, for them to do it and to go out there and have fun and to play music and to try stuff out. I can get it though when some bands don't make, maybe the best. I've been to some shows where I'm like, you guys play too much new stuff and all your legendary stuff you just completely ignored. And you got to be also, the band's got to be okay with whatever, response they're going to get from the audience. It goes both ways, honestly. I think the audience should always respect what the band wants to do, but the band also has to understand that if the audience doesn't like it, they just don't like it.
And that's, exactly.
That's the most important thing at the end of the day.
What do you enjoy about performing live?
Yeah, live is my favorite. Performing live is my favorite side of music. I love being in the studio and writing, but I think to me, live is where it's the most fun, and where it is the closest to why I fell in love with this. You know what I mean? And so, I think my favorite thing about playing live, obviously, there's the interaction between the band and the audience. I think that's great when you're seeing that people are having a great time. And you're kind of serving as somewhat of an escape for them. Like they may have had a terrible week at work. They may be going, having a terrible year, but that 2 hour or 1 hour bit that you give them could make a big difference. I think that's great. And I also just love the interacting and playing live music with other musicians. I've done a lot of gigs where you're playing to a click track, or you're playing, there's a backing tracks on it or something. And that sometimes can feel more like you're playing along to a record, because you're playing the same thing every single night, and it's, there's constraints. But then the songs where you don't play it to click, like on Mechanics, there was a lot of stuff to click, but there was a couple moments without, where all of a sudden my experience of playing the song is completely different, because now I'm looking at everybody and you're playing off of them. And I think that's great. That's something that I think gets lost a little bit, because it's easy. Once you go on tour, it's just a machine. You just keep doing it. You're on autopilot. And you actually sometimes forget about playing with each other and looking at each other. And so I definitely do love that side of it. Yeah, there's an adrenaline or a mental thing that happens when you're on stage. A lot like the rest of the world kind of shuts off, and the only thing that matters is this. And so that, that's always something that I've loved about it too.
What do you have to do day to day to maintain your skill set as a drummer?
I mean, there's different ways, and there's different ways that you could say skill applies to the drum kit. Like, there's technique, but then there's feel, and then there's, you know, creativity. So obviously, like, as far as the feel and creativity, I think that comes with, I mean, I listen to a lot of music, and I'm always trying to learn new things, listen to different drummers, and that can help the creative side. As far as like technique, yeah, I have my warm up and practice routines that I do. It depends on what I've got going up and like what I've got going on. For example, like this week, I'm going to Indiana to go do a drum clinic. So after this call, I'm going to be practicing what I'm doing there, making sure I've got all those parts right. But then if I've got nothing going on other than like, you know, session work or just rehearsals, then, and even, you know, I do this before every show, I sit there with a pad and a metronome and I go through my rudiments, like my different exercises. It's like working out, you know, it's a muscle, it's a brain thing. It, you know, you got to practice it like anybody, the same way that an athlete may do, you know, has to go to practice to do that. It's about maintaining the technique, maintaining the, you know, you don't want your fingers or your wrists to get a bit rusty. So yeah, like I have different practice things that I do, as well as, you know, obviously playing music. Cause I think you can get caught up on the technique stuff and actually forget to play music sometimes. And it's like, why are you drumming? Like, why are you doing all this if you're actually not even, you know, doing something, playing music with other people or playing music that people enjoy listening to? I think the answer to what you do as a drummer also reflects on why do you drum. Like, are you drumming because you want to be the fastest guy on earth, or you want to play on the most hit records, or you want to just have fun? Like, there's so many different things, and I think that ends up shaping how you prepare for all of that. But I try to keep a bit of a balance. I think, you know, keeping up the technique is definitely super important, so I'm always kind of doing that. But I think also sometimes actually playing music can go a long way.
The podcast is listened to throughout the world. As a final message, what would you like to say?
To you, thank you for having me on. I hope that everybody listening, you know, has enjoyed the chat and can check out whatever I've got going on. And if they like it, then amazing. Come along for the ride. It's, you know, I'm really lucky to be doing this. I've said this multiple times that I don't feel like I work a day in my life because I get to play drums. So I find myself really lucky. And yeah, honestly, to anybody, like if you've got something that you're passionate about, and that you care about and that you're good at, then pursue it, you know, do it. There's no reason to not. And music keeps you young. It keeps you, you know, I mean, obviously it keeps you active and it keeps you interacting with people and it keeps your brain going, but it keeps it fun, which I think is important, especially, you know, in this day and age. So yeah, that would be my thing. You know, if you've got a passion or a dream, go for it. Don't let people tell you why it's not going to work, because you know, if you care about something enough and if you like it, then there's a chance people will like it too. But you got to make sure you like it and that you're committed as well.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.